Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast along with JJ Cooper. I'm John Manuel, coming to you live from the world headquarters here in Durham. JJ, spring is in the air. Camps have officially opened.
Yay!
We had college baseball last weekend.
Yay!
Live, which was outstanding. Much more to come this weekend.
Yay!
Prospect season pretty much over. Time to have real games, which is also awesome. But JJ, we were wrapping a print edition of the magazine today, doing our usual stuff online, in print. And both of us were just stunned, shocked by the news that we'll lead off with, which was Dexter Fowler signing a one-year, $15 million contract with the Chicago Cubs. Now, Dexter Fowler is not a superstar, but he's a good player. He was a Cubs center fielder last year and had one of his best seasons of his career. But the Cubs seem to have taken care of center field, at least for the short term, by signing Jason Hayward in the offseason. Their outfield corners were seemed to be set with Kyle Schwarber and Jorge Soler.
Chris Coughlin
around.
Matt Caesar to be the fifth outfielder, fourth outfielder off the bench.
He's on the 40-man roster. Hey, you can always sneak Ben Zobrist out there in case you want to play Javier Baez at second base.
And Arizmendi Alcantara is like, hello?
Yes, you are. So the Cubs already had plenty of options without Dexter Fowler. They seemed very ready to let him walk, J.J., but now he didn't walk, and now he gives the Cubs. It's just very strange. We're living in a strange time, JJ, where we have some out of left field, some guys from a skit. Only would have been a skit 8 years ago at Saturday Night Live for Donald Trump to be running for president. He's very seriously running for president right now. And it would have been a skit 20 years ago with George Will being imitated by Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live talking about the Cubs winning the World Series. But here we have the Cubs winning 97 games last year, winning a playoff series. And what they've done in the offseason and adding Dexter Fowler, am I crazy? Or are the Cubs clearly the favorite in Major League Baseball in 2016?
It's hard to say a favorite. They are one of the favorites. And the thing that jumps out to me about it is that I've always said the Cubs are always a team that there's no other way to put it. For years and years and years and years, they've punched below their weight. They should be. They always should be a behemoth.
Correct.
They're in a city. They have a fan base where they should be a behemoth. And instead, what has actually ended up happening is that for many years, I mean, it's the criticism of the Cubs, and it's a fair one, which was they knew they would be successful.
Financially.
Whether they won 95 or they won 70.
Yep.
And that was a curse in many years. But now what we are seeing is again, if you said something, if I told you 20 years ago that the Cubs would go out and snatch away free agents that other teams thought they had landed because they were willing to spend money, and oh yeah, by the way, we'd be sitting here with spring training having started and the Yankees have not made literally any big free agent move.
Not one significant free agent signing. Yeah, you know, the biggest moves of the offseason were two trades. Castro from the Cubs and Aroldis Chapman. So the Cubs have been the biggest players. They've been the biggest movers and shakers.
And they are the thing I just wanted. I mean, the depth. The
flexibility.
And this is a Joe Maddon hallmark. I mean, this is a Rays approach. The Rays approach was always, there literally would never be a Rays player who you say, if that guy goes down, this team's sunk. Partly because, I mean, they did have Longoria and all, but they always had options. Yeah, they couldn't replace Nevin Longoria, but they always had options where if that guy gets hurt, this guy can play here and here and here.
Right.
Well, the Cubs now, with Joe Maddon, have taken that to a truly, you just summed it up. I don't know right now, what is Jason Hayward's main position going to be?
It's outfield. He breaks. Matt Eddy will be very unhappy because he can't list somebody as just center field or corner outfield. He's going to probably play as much center field as he plays right field.
Dexter Jorge Soler just became the most overqualified left fielder in, you know.
Or Dexter Fowler at $15 million became the highest paid fourth outfielder in the major leagues. Because really, I would hate to play the Cubs in softball when you have four outfielders. Because Schwarber, a softball player if there ever was one, Fowler, Hayward, and Soler, you can't play all four of those guys at the same time, JJ. I mean, it's still
But you're going to have a little bit of sketchy defense behind the plate.
Well, I would not want to play the Cubs in interleague because they have the ready-made DH and Schwarbs. I presume at some point Kyle Schwarber will play some catcher this year. Last year they liked to use him when Kyle Hendricks pitched. So maybe that's another way.
I think it's about one day. I think it's about, yeah.
Once every 5 days, you can roll him behind the plate because he can catch. Kyle Hendricks doesn't have overwhelming velocity. But the Cubs, offensively, lineup-wise, JJ, it's hard to remember a team, and this is even back to the era that was, you know, the gorilla ball era of Major League Baseball. It's hard to remember a team that's as athletic and as versatile and as deep in its lineup as they are.
Right, because when I think deep lineup, I always go back to the Indians of the mid-90s.
That's the one I was thinking
when
of.
You think of deep lineup, you think of, it's like, okay, wait, where did Jim Tomei bat in that lineup? Wait, where did Manny Ramirez bat?
I think the
they were the second three-hole and cleanup hitters, basically.
I would think of were we pigeonholing the 95 Indians, that team that scored 840 runs in 140 games, or was it a year later?
Yes.
I forget which team it was, but that era where you had Tony Pena and Sandy Alomar as their catchers, which is pretty funny. But Paul Sorrento, Baerga when he was good, Vizquel, Bell, Lofton, Manny Ramirez. Those were ridiculous lineups. Yeah, Jim Tomei at third base. Third base Jim Tomei, kind of hard to remember that he played third base.
Oh, I remember.
JJ's career fixation on Jim Tomei lasted the entire Jim Tomei career. That team was first in the major leagues in runs, on base, batting, slugging, OPS, and stolen bases, by the way,
They were pretty good.
That was a knot of jugger. But, this team, there's no 50 home run guy. At least I don't think so. Maybe not. Maybe there
Chris
is.
Chris Bryant says, wait a second.
Jorge Soler says, un momento, por favor. Anthony Rizzo, 30 home runs. So they do have...
Schwarber's like, just give me 155 games.
I mean, basically, only at catcher and at shortstop are they not yet... Like, Miguel Montero at his peak was a well above average offensive catcher. I think he's a little past his peak.
He's an 8-hole hitter on this team.
Addison Russell...
Or 7 because of the... You know,
right, Addison Russell, like, guess the 9-hole
hitter. The pitcher is
hitter.
The 8-hole hitter, and then Addison Russell's the 9-hole.
But
and
that's
Addison
a dangerous 9-hole guy.
If you told me that Addison Russell this year broke through and was one of the better hitting shortstops in the National League, wouldn't surprise me in any way, shape, or form.
Correct. No,
this is
absolutely
a guy who's hit throughout his minor league career. He had a little bit more of an adjustment period than, you know, some of the other Cubs guys did last year. At the same time, he was also one of the youngest guys in the National League.
Right.
And, oh yeah, by the way, I mean, the funny part about this is, we said, where does Schwarber play? Where does Soler play? And I come back with, where does Javier Baez play?
I mean, Javier Baez, 2 years ago, so after the 2013 season, you know, Chris Bryant had a great debut, finished the year in the Florida State League. I think he hit 9 home runs and had hit 31 in the regular season. But, you know, Javier Baez had hit like 37 in that regular season and had finished in Double A. And, yeah, he struck out, but so had Bryant a lot. And Baez was playing shortstop and hitting all those home runs. And we gave them the same grade in the handbook that year, JJ. They were both 70 mediums. But we had Baez 1 and Bryant 2. It was the first year I did the Cubs prospect list. And I remember going back and forth. And pretty much everyone on the Cubs system said, we love Chris Bryant, but I just don't see how we can say that he has a higher ceiling
than a shortstop
than Javier Baez.
A shortstop who hits 37 home runs.
And there was...
As a 20-21.
I think he was younger. I mean, he probably is still younger. And there was just such, there was this nagging
doubt.
If he
was
doubt.
Younger, I will say he still is.
There was that
he
nagging,
either was or he's not. This is not the late 90s or the early aughts where you go.
Yeah, he's not Pablo Ozuna.
Pablo Ozuna was younger than him, and now he's a lot older than him.
But we had no idea, and it was, he's a full, Javi Baez is almost a full year younger than Bryant. Bryant's January 92, Baez is December of 92. So we gave the edge to Baez. And
Bryant is a better. I mean, I don't think it's close right now. As good as Javier Baez could be,
right?
I don't think it's clearly it's not close. I'm going to take the guy. I'll take the guy who I've already. You know, you already have a dominant rookie of the year season in his back pocket.
The best 199 strikeout season in baseball history. But Javier Baez.
Javier Baez is like, I can get you to 199
exactly.
strikeouts.
Wait for it.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all.
But where does he play, JJ? What is his future? What happens
his right now is
to Arizmendi Alcantara?
He's playing in Iowa if he's not traded. I mean, he is. But this is the question now that the Cubs, this is a good problem to have.
Yes.
Kyle Schwarber even. You have the question. Okay. Kyle, that was a great second half of the season. 16 homers in the regular season. You're already our career postseason home run champ. We've already enshrined a home run ball that you hit, right. You know, on top of the, you know, out of Wrigley. All these things. And you actually have to ask the question, are you better served sending Schwarber, not for the whole season or anything like that,
right?
But you know what? This first month, we're going to send you back to Iowa, just let you work on catching so that we can catch you. We feel like another month, another 2 months, and you'll be able to catch more often. It's unlikely that they will do that. It's really hard to do that to someone who has already proven that they're one of the better hitters, you know, in the AL and the NL Central, at least. Right. I won't say the league, but in the NL Central. Okay.
To use an older term that has fallen into disfavor, one of the more feared hitters.
Yes.
In the National League Central.
Yeah. Oh, he's absolutely one more feared. Javier Baez, I will say, the thing that the Cubs could do here is that they could say Javier Baez is going to play 4 games a week and not have a position.
Yeah, that will be the challenge. Can Javi Baez do that? Can he turn into that? We've had these hints over the last year or so that can he be kind of like this new Ben Zobrist? Of course,
the old Ben Zobrist is like,
okay. No, he doesn't walk like me, so no. Yeah. But can he be that super, that Swiss Army knife kind of player?
The thing is if you do that, the crazy thing, and the Cubs start the season, should be looking. I mean, you don't want to get cocky, but the Cubs obviously should be looking, how are we set up in October? And one thing with that is that it's not going to be great for their counting stats, but the reality of this is that the Cubs have the ability, if they want to say, literally no one on this team is going to play 150-plus games.
Really, you wonder if Joe Maddon has been talking to Greg Popovich of to go cross-comp the NBA.
You know what? Anthony Rizzo's not going to make this West Coast road trip.
I'm saying, seriously, you're not playing this in this series. You're getting this series off. I mean, but seriously, I'm with you. To manage their playing time. We're talking about this as if the Cubs have won the Central. They have. And obviously, the Pirates won 98 games last year and the Cardinals won 100, while the Cubs won 97 games. But it is hard to look at their roster, JJ. There's almost no way you can imagine that they're not going to be a productive offense. What would have to happen for their offense to not be one of the most productive in baseball?
The biggest scenario I can come up with is that guys don't respond well to not being in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
That would be the only thing I think of. But it is really true that Anthony Rizzo is really valuable to that team. Okay, let's say that tomorrow I have to take Anthony Rizzo out of that lineup for something. You know, he's got an injury or whatever. Okay, well, Schwarber, let's get your first baseman.
Or Chris Bryant,
you move over there. Javier Baez, you're our third baseman. Okay, let's pick somewhere else. Shortstop, Addison Russell's down. Javier Baez, here's your spot.
Yep.
Okay, second base.
As it was in the playoffs.
Second base, Ben Zobrist goes down. Javier Baez, here's your spot. And by the way, again, Arizmendi, sorry, you're still not even coming up to the big leagues.
They have Tommy La Stella.
Right.
Tommy La Stella's a nice pinch hitter type guy to have because he's that short swing, low maintenance. I bet you he makes the roster, lefty bat off the bench.
And here's the thing, though, here's the thing that the Dexter Fowler move does do. If you were being, before the Dexter Fowler move, the only center fielder they really had was Jason Hayward. I mean, because Chris Bryant,
right,
you can put out there, but I'm not thinking that Chris Bryant is your everyday center fielder.
Right.
Jason Hayward, who has had injury problems in the past.
Correct.
If something had happened to Jason Hayward, it had been Matt Caesar or Arizmendi or, again, Javier Baez learning on the fly or Albert Almora, who we're not even bringing up.
So at the very least, you can hit him 8 or 9 hole and just let him go play defense and learn it.
And it's not like that these are horrendous options in any way, shape, or form.
Quality options.
But it does mean that instead of that, now you have literally two center fielders. You have two legitimate right fielders. You have three, really, because Chris Bryant, you can put Chris Bryant in right field.
How about Ben Zobrist?
Or Ben Zobrist, yes. Yes.
I know he's 35.
But yes, no, Ben Zobrist can play right field every bit as well as he can play second.
He could still probably play a little fill-in shortstop.
I wouldn't go that far with
fill-in.
Him, but third base?
Yeah,
absolutely. He did third. You know, that's.
I mean, Bryant played third base, left field, right field, center field, first base last year. He started games at all those positions for the Cubs, and that's a rookie doing that. And their athleticism, versatility, options offensively still does seem the thing that could sink this team. JJ clearly is pitching,
but
I don't think you can expect them to get what they got out of Jake Arrieta out of him
you
again.
You can't expect that out of anyone.
Hey, you know,
you can't expect that out of Clayton Kershaw or Zach Greinke.
I expect that out of Kershaw. I'll be honest with you, he is on another level. But Lester and Lackey, hey, you know, last time they got together, there was a lot of chicken, a lot of beer. Didn't go so hot.
No.
So I think it'll go better this year.
Yes.
They have older catchers with Montero and David Ross. I mean, I'm trying to think
again. Wellington Castillo is going to be in AAA.
Wilson Contreras.
Wilson Contreras. That was terrible.
They used to have Wellington Castillo.
Yes, they used to have Wellington. I'm thinking. I'm still freaked out about my Diamondbacks catcher situation.
You are.
I obsess about Diamondback catchers for some reason, but
it's a good reason.
But no, you do look at it, but the other thing that they've done, and this is a much more of an under the radar move, but the Cubs have also gone out there and they have just hoovered up every semi-intriguing AAA minor league with an invite, you know, we'll sign this guy and bring him to big league camp kind of guy. And the idea is that those fifth, sixth, seventh innings, they're going to overwhelm with numbers.
Yeah, that was the Chris Coughlin deal. They traded Chris Coughlin for Aaron Brooks to the Athletics.
Not a major deal.
Not a major deal. But he adds to the story that JJ that you're talking about. So the Cubs kind of your fungible pitchers that Spencer Patton is in this group, and Dury Acevedo, whom they signed, put on the 40-man roster as a minor league free agent. Dallas Beeler's in this group. They went out and got Rex Brothers. Last year they found Trevor Cahill. C.J. Edwards, Carl Edwards Jr., former John Manuel Cheeseball, had to back off that train. Now he's moved to the bullpen. Eric Jokic is part of this deal as a left-hander. Neil Ramirez, Clayton Richard, C.J. Riefenhauser. And then the trade they made with the Yankees with Starlin Castro brought over Adam Warren, who's started some, he's relieved some, he wants to start. He's a nice sixth starter to have if Jason Hamill or one of these other veterans gets injured.
Right, and he also is that right now you're thinking, again, come October, he should be on, if it goes well, he should be in your postseason bullpen.
Travis Wood has filled this role already for them. Past all-star Travis Wood. So their depth, again, that's the hallmark of the roster, JJ. So, yes, the Cubs
to use a joke that we use around the office, you know, going back to the first year that Theo Epstein was in Boston, yeah, and you were gathering 40-man rosters, you see 28 on the roster, you email Theo and basically say, is this it? And he goes, who needs 40?
Yeah.
This year, the Cubs are saying, no, 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 we need 40. We're going to have up and down. We're going to go beyond 40, 25.
That's it. We're going to use all 40. And that's really how it seems for them. They could use all 40. And, JJ, I think the negative here for the rest of the division is contending with that, and I think it's going to be very difficult for the Cardinals, among other teams.
Because the Cardinals, let's be honest, I mean, they were the team. They've been the juggernaut of the NL Central. They've been the best team in the National League in odd number years. Got to say the Giants are the best team in the even number.
The regular season,
they've been
the best team in the National League basically since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been a couple years here or there where they weren't. I think they have one losing season and all that.
But
they've been the most consistent franchise in the National League for a decade.
If you're a Cardinals fan right now, though, you got to be a little nervous because, for one, I mean, the big thing is that the Cardinals are not the same team when Yadier Molina is not healthy.
Correct.
And playing. And Yadier Molina is potentially not healthy and not playing.
Correct.
That's a concern. But also, their offseason, they've gotten worse.
That's all there is to it for me, is they are not the favorite in this division anymore, not on paper. And, their outfield was formidable last year, deep, varied. It is less so this year. They're really, if they don't get a big year out of Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty, they're in trouble. Those are two of their biggest right-handed bats, and they need them every day. And neither of those guys, who I like both of them, but neither one has been an everyday guy in the big leagues yet. If one of those guys doesn't step forward, it's Tommy Pham. Again, personal cheese ball, love Tommy Pham. But Matt Holliday's getting older. They're going to work him out some at first base. You might see all three of those guys in the outfield. Hey, it might work out. But they're a lot thinner.
But they do not
there.
Have, again, when we're just talking about the insane depth
exactly.
that the Cubs have, the Cardinals, and the reality is that puts them like most teams.
Right.
They're a mortal, normal team.
That's right.
We've got a weakness here, but you know what? We're going to be strong here. We can make up for that.
That's how
teams normally are constructed.
They could still win 100 games because they're the Cardinals. They have really good players. They have extremely good leadership, and especially when Molina's there. They're not going to give this division up willfully.
Let's go to the Pirates for a second. And the reality is, again, with the Pirates...
I want to touch on the Cardinals. You seem to be pretty high on the Korean pitcher that they picked up.
I think he sounds
pretty interesting.
I do. I think he's a solid solid reliever. That's what they hired him. No, that's what they signed him to be. But you look at his stuff. I've watched some of his games. YouTube is a truly wonderful, amazing thing.
It is. It's amazing.
And the thing about it is that it's stuff again. As I've prefaced many a time, this is just what I'm seeing, and I'm not saying that's a informed opinion, but it's not
right. And I'm
not a 20-year scout doing this or anything like that. But the stuff looks like stuff that plays. I mean, it's legit. There's velo again, and I love.
I think he also fits what they need because out of the bullpen last year, other than Rosenthal. Right-handed setup relief. Seth Maness was a little up and down for them last year. Carlos Villanueva has been generally inconsistent over the course of his career. I think this is a good pickup for St. Mm-hmm. Louis. I think he fits for them. But between he and Jed Jerko are like their two big off-season acquisitions. That does not... they didn't need to make a ton of improvements after.
Right, but they lost Jason Hayward.
Lost Hayward. They lost Lackey, who was the only guy who started two playoff games for them. And Lance Lynn is injured. So I think it was a net minus for St. Louis.
And again, you look to the Pirates. When we talk about the insanity that is the Cubs lineup, and you look at the Pirates and you say, okay, so who's the first baseman? Oh, it's John Jaso.
Yeah,
okay.
John Jaso, Michael Moore / Jason Rogers platoon.
Now, again, we don't think that's going to be the long-term answer there. We think that that's that's the keeping it warm until Josh Bell arrives.
Until the bell tolls, yes.
But that being said, it's an understandable. You do that because you have to find an answer that's inexpensive. I mean, the reality of it is that I understand even where they can make the argument, you know what, we may be better there than we were with Pedro Alvarez.
That's possible. I like John Jaso's bat.
I will say this. At the price of what you were paying, it is more bang for your buck, probably.
Yes.
But
yes.
Again...
And you'll save a little money on the post-game spread.
But again...
Fat guy making fat jokes did it again.
But again, at the same time, you look at that and you say, okay, that's not... this is not where the Cubs in 2016 are, is where they go.
That's
John
right.
Jaso... Michael Moore,
John Jaso, by the way, who has played 5 innings in his major league career at first base coming into this season, according
how
to baseballreference.com.
How hard is it to play first base? It's very hard. And Josh Bell, exactly. With the Pirates, can tell him in camp, it's hard. It's
exactly.
Very hard.
Tell
I've
him,
gotten
Wash,
better at it.
Playing first base is easy, right, Wash? It's very hard.
I mean, Josh Bell got better as the season went along, but he's struggled to make that adjustment. The outfield looks easy compared to first base for Josh Bell.
You're very active at first base. Hey, if John Jaso can be the next Scott Hatteberg, awesome. I like
right,
that.
Right, but that's, again, that is you're saying then that you are, okay, we'll get adequate production here.
Right.
And we're counting on that we will get really good production elsewhere. And again, obviously they have an outfield that can help on that because they have 3 outfielders who...
They have a tremendous outfield.
Starling Marte. If Jorge Soler ends up playing left field, him and Starling Marte can have an NL Central battle on. Left fielder that no one...
A skills challenge.
No one runs on Marte. No one runs on Soler. I mean, that would be fun, actually.
That would be fun.
Because, I think Marte was 18 assists last year?
I think so. Something like that. Something
I like
the
Pirates fans' Twitter just, every time someone... it always would pop up in my feed when someone tried to run on Marte.
I still like their pitching, At the same time, Charlie Morton was kind of an important piece for them for several years. There's just been churn.
There's going to be churn with the Pirates. And you know what? I will say this, that the Pirates have earned...
Absolutely.
Expectation that when they take a guy and say, we'll see what we can do with this.
When they trade Neil Walker for John Neese, I'm like, ooh, John Neese in Pittsburgh, that could get interesting. Sinker ball, left-hander in a ballpark that's really hard for right-handed hitters to hit power in. John Neese could take a nice little jump up. He checks a lot of the same boxes that Jay Happ checks. So that's a guy who has capacity for growth. They do have Tyler Glasnow and Josh Bell, and perhaps Jameson Taillon.
Throwing off the mound.
All of whom could impact their major league roster in a significant way in 2016. I still like the Cardinals. I still like the Pirates.
But you just
Brewers and Reds still gaining acceptance.
Yeah, and that's going to help all three of these teams when you talk about, because really someone's trying for the wild card when it's all said and done.
The Brewers and the Reds really are like the 12-year-old playing Dan Quayle in SNL in 88. I mean, it's like, oh, golly, I'm going to do swell this year. You know, that's those two teams.
It is going to be, I mean, but that
the
is
Cubs,
something.
The Cubs could run away and hide. Even in a division with three outstanding organizations, they really could. Just up and down, they have so few questions. They could really run away and hide.
Again, let's try to map out what is your, I call it worst case scenario. I mean, okay, worst case scenario. Obviously, injuries always can happen.
I think it involves pitching. It's like the pitching
staff. If Jake Arrieta goes down, the reality is, I think if Jake Arrieta goes down, you're talking about a playoff team, but you're talking about a playoff team that when they get to the playoffs, just doesn't have the pitching firepower
right.
to compete. Because again, you get to the playoffs, and then you are going to, they don't win a battle of aces. Because as good as John Lester could be I love the idea that John Lester's your number two.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't want him to be my number. I don't want him to be the number one. I want him to be the number two. John Lackey is fine.
Well, just in the National League, if you're matching up Lester in a playoff series with the Cardinals and Adam Wainwright, I mean, Adam Wainwright, I know he's come off an Achilles, but I'll take Adam Wainwright. If you're matching him up with the Dodgers, I'll take Clayton Kershaw. If you're matching him up with the Diamondbacks, I'll take Greinke. If you're matching up with the Giants, I'll take Bumgarner. Taking up with the Mets, I'll take 1, 2, and 3. That's the problem. And that's the problem. I mean, but with Jake Arrieta, you at his best, you have that fighting chance. That is the caveat. Arrieta did throw 229 innings last year, just in the regular season. Seemed like he got a little tired in the postseason. That's the guy who's going to be treated like Tim Duncan this year.
The other part of this is, though, is
I guess he's actually more like he's the Manu Ginobili, you know. He's got the weird hair that looks good in a onesie, pajama onesie, different kind of cat.
But the other part of this is that this is the Cubs team we're talking about right now. And what we just established is the Cubs can also, if there is a need, I mean, we don't know right now who's going to be the guys who are available come July.
But there's depth.
But if they need to make a deal, they are the team that can go out and trade someone and do it and say, our lineup will be fine.
Right.
And trade someone of significant value.
Someone, you have to imagine that either Albert Almora or Billy McKinney will have some trade value, if not both, in the first half.
And I'm talking
Wilson Contreras is going to have some trade value. Ian Happ. This is a guy who could really hit, whether he's a second baseman or whatever position he is, he could hit.
But if you needed to raise it up a notch and you wanted to make a blockbuster deal, Javier Baez.
Oh, absolutely. Great point. And that has actually, JJ, we've seen that in the last
Soler.
2 years of major league ready, controllable, low-cost talent is greater currency even than prospects.
Right.
And they have that. You're right.
Jorge Soler should be more valuable than any of the prospects they have in the minors because the reality is, for one, like you talk about their outfits, Jorge Soler has better tools than than McKinney or Almora.
Right.
He just does.
Yeah.
Or but he's Baez. Also, or, you know, Baez, I would say, Soler has a better track record of big league success than Baez. But I would say
Baez has better tools.
Baez has better tools.
Yeah, no, I think he does. That's what I thought I would say. But yeah, Baez has better tools. Soler, a little bit more polished hitter, but tool for tool. And Baez, infielder over the outfielder.
Right. You know? But Soler is a, you know, again,
Soler's a monster.
So I'll put it this way: I mean, you look at what Cespedes has got in the how he was traded midseason last year, and you say, okay, I know he's not at that level of track record of production, but considering that I would be trading for Jorge Soler
with some control,
with 4 years or so of,
well, I think it's more than that. Isn't his contract like? Didn't he sign a 9-year contract when he signed?
So you're talking about, I mean, you really are talking about, that would be a massive trade chip. Again, and I'm not saying that they would do that because he's Jorge Soler.
Right.
They may
But they are going to have multiple options, again, because of the depth and versatility of their major league roster. It really is. I mean, it was already in place. You know, signing Dexter Fowler didn't make us think this. It just highlighted just how deep and just how versatile they are. So that little bit of news today. And yeah, Soler is signed through 2020, JJ. The next years, as it's $3 million this year, $3 million, $4 million, $4 million, $4 million. So yes,
thank you, B-Rex.
Cost controlled and very, very affordable.
The other part of this is that, and this is what allowed them. It comes back to, for one, as we've talked about on the podcast before, the Cubs are reaching the point of where they are minting money. This is this is the other part of the Theo Epstein experience that, you know, that we saw in Boston, which is that when, not just Theo Epstein, but I mean, again, John Henry, throw them all together. But when the Red Sox started to be run at a much better level, one of the things with that also was, okay, if we're not leaving Fenway, let's turn Fenway into a giant
cash machine.
And it is. I mean, again,
that we can hit over someone over the head with later.
Sorry. Why were there not seats above the Green Monster before that?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it looks so obvious now.
It's like, why?
Or the construction that's going on at Wrigley Field now, the modernization of that park going on now, that will make Wrigley Field seemingly a very similar situation.
Giant cash machine. Okay, well, what that allows you to do, that's part of it. But the other part of it is when your entire, you just talked about Soler. When you are paying Soler what you're paying Soler, and Bryant what you're paying Bryant, and Baez, and Russell, and Schwarber, and all these guys who are producing at, you hope and you expect, all-star caliber production.
Right.
And you're paying them $550,000 here and $550,000 there. Well, then that allows you to say, you know what? We don't need Dexter Fowler. They didn't need Dexter Fowler.
Right.
But when the opportunity arose and you go, you know, it's just 1 year. It. It's not, we're not locked into him for the next 10. Yeah, we can do that. After they already spent money on Zobrist, after they already spent money on Lackey, that's what it allows them to do. The combination of the Cubs finally being operated like a team that really, again, has
that cares about winning and can still make money.
And has almost all the advantages of a Yankees or a Dodgers, those type teams where you say big market and giant fan base. Look, the White Sox, I understand if you're a White Sox fan, it's not the same.
No.
Yes, you are in a massive city, but you're sharing the market. The Mets, even before, like, let's be honest, before basically their ownership went broke or pretty close to it, even before that, it wasn't the same because it's not, you're the Mets, you're not the Yankees.
Right.
You can have your moments.
They've had their moments, but sustaining it proves very
difficult. It's more difficult.
And part of it really isn't even just the Mets. Part of it really with them is the Yankees are just so good. The White Sox, even when, I think it's almost harder for the White Sox in a way because they even won a World Series. And the whole city was kind of like, that's great. Nice. That's it. Wake us up when the Cubs win one. Because imagine what it would have been like if the Cubs had won in 2003. Just 2 years later, the White Sox won, and they didn't just win. They won in dominant fashion. And, I mean, I know that Chicago did respond, but not like they would or will with the Cubs.
The reality is that, again, the Cubs have the same fan base advantage of a team like the Cardinals, but they're doing it in a city that's a lot bigger.
JJ, last thing on the Cubs before we transition to you're going to spring training, so you will we'll talk a little bit about what you're going to in Florida. Have you seen the rider that George Will has in his contract, his rider when he goes to speak? If he's going to speak at your, I think this is on thesmokinggun.com, I can't find it, but I believe it is that if he's giving a speech, he's scheduled to talk, but he can go see a Cubs playoff game, he can break contract no problem, and go to the Cubs playoff game. So that's going to be tested in a presidential election year. Just saying. I think it's going to be severely tested. So I also did want to mention, JJ, any of these free agents who are still available that you think, so the Orioles thought they had.
Instead of talking about, we can talk about spring training with me later, but let's wrap this up with this because we also have, I'm excited, at the end of this, we also have a Juan Hillman interview. Got to talk to Juan Hillman, the Indians left-hander, who was very enjoyable to talk to. Very fascinating story. Juan Hillman, who comes from one of the baseball powers, because Olympia High in Orlando.
Absolutely, it's the water.
It is the it is big. It is future big leaguer. It is prospect after prospect after prospect. Guys get drafted out of there seemingly every year. Last year it was Juan Hillman. The year before that was Nick Gordon.
Yeah, second round pick last year for the Tribe.
And then, it was Nick Gordon the year before that. Then you go back a little bit, you've got
Jesse Winker and Walker Weichel and Mason Williams.
Yes. So, a lot of guys.
And also, in a very recent span of time. This is not We're not talking Tate High School. There's no knock on Tate High School, but that was like Travis Fryman, but Pensacola, and Buck Showalter, and a lot of other players.
Talking, this is all in the last 6-7 years.
I believe, actually, Addison Russell might have gone to Tate High School. I know he's from that area, so he may be the new...
So we'll have that, but I did want to talk, because the flip side of this is that, because, I mean, even now, we're all adjusted to it, but the shock of the moment when the tweet started coming out, like Gordon Whittemeyer tweeting out, like, hey, you know,
Dexter Fowler's here.
And everyone going, you know, wait, what is going on here? Because everyone he was signed, everyone believed that he was an Oriole.
Yep.
This was the Orioles' plan. They got Gallardo. It took a little longer than everyone had thought, but they got Gallardo. And once you get Gallardo, well, then giving up another pick to get Dexter Fowler, no big deal.
And that got, I got a lot of people on my Twitter feed like, oh, they already lost it for Gallardo. They lost. They had 2 first-round picks, their own at 14, and which is the one they're giving up for signing Gallardo. And then at 29 for the they got from the Marlins for Wei and Chen.
So they're giving up their 2nd first-round pick for Fowler. Instead, now, congratulations, you get to keep your pick. The bad news is you don't get Dexter Fowler. And I mean that is interesting to me from the standpoint of this is a team that Dexter Fowler was a good fit.
I think he was a good fit. The Orioles don't really have a right fielder right now. They have their own Korean outfielder. Their own Korean. I don't want to butcher his name, so I'm already forgetting his name. But they also have, obviously, they're set in center field with Adam Jones. Dexter Fowler was not going to play center field if he'd signed there. The big question for Baltimore is you kind of have to go for it, JJ, when you have one more year, Matt Wieters. They picked up his, gave him the qualifying offer. You've got a pitching staff that needed Gallardo, needed someone to replace Wei and Chen's innings. They really don't have a number one or even like a true number two type starter. J.J. Hardy's not getting any younger. Adam Jones isn't getting any younger. As a team whose window seems to be closing, it feels like they should make some other move. But right now, Dariel Alvarez and Mark Trumbo are probably the right fielders because it's Kim and Nolan Reimold in left field. With Rule 5 or Joey Rickard in the mix in left field or right field. Whom do they sign? I mean, the available free agents right now are guys like Austin Jackson. Could you lose a first-round pick for signing Austin Jackson?
No, you don't.
It feels like you can't do that.
No.
He was traded. Yeah, you're right. He was traded.
He was not tendered. Austin Jackson had been tendered.
Well, he was traded during the year.
Right, but if Austin Jackson had been tendered, he would have signed that tender the moment it was tendered.
So Alex Rios, Shane Victorino, maybe you tried to sign Pedro Alvarez, who does have, I believe, draft pick compensation attached?
No.
He's not either?
No. I mean, and Pedro Alvarez, you don't sign Pedro Alvarez because Pedro Alvarez can't play a position that you have
available. But you could put Mark Trumbo in the outfield, or you could put Chris Davis in the outfield. I'm not saying that you should. I'm just saying you can.
And I'm saying no. Okay. I'm saying that's not a viable option. I bet
the Orioles wind up with Chris Davis playing an awful lot of outfield this year because those outfielders I just mentioned are brutal. And you still have Trumbo, and you do have Christian Walker and Trey Mancini in the minor leagues, either of whom could produce more offensively than the other players we just mentioned.
I think, there is no good answer there. I mean, there's not a good answer. There's not a good answer. Like, again, you could go a different direction and say, okay, maybe you try to trade for Jay Bruce.
Yes, he's probably, and that was that's a good way to wrap actually this part of it, JJ. I think our reaction to the discussed Jay Bruce trade, the 3-team trade that would have sent Bruce to Toronto, but the initial Twitter pieces of news that came out of Angels involved in this deal, maybe we thought that Jay Bruce was going to the Angels. It turned out it would have been Michael Saunders, right,
mm-hmm.
going to the Angels, and the Angels giving up prospects to the Reds. First, I think we both were underwhelmed by what the Reds got for Aroldis Chapman, but there are understandable reasons for that one.
My criticism is not that I think that is the best that they could have gotten that time.
Yeah.
Again, my criticism
or was, close to it. Yeah.
You know, my criticism with that is simply you by trading him when they traded him, you took all the risk because you took the hit for this domestic violence, you know,
right.
potential suspension and all. And the black eye, you said, okay, let's trade him when his value in essence is the lowest, where if you basically waited that out and said, let's see if there's a suspension.
Yeah.
Even if there is, let's have him serve his suspension as a red, and then let's see if we can get a better deal in June or July. The only risk you have there is if he gets hurt.
And then the other trade they made, I mean, the Todd Frazier trade, I think we were both a little underwhelmed by their return there. I mean, Jose Peraza really, you have to believe in Jose Peraza in a significant fashion. Scott Schiebler. What else did they get in that deal? Those are the two main
prospects. Those are the two main prospects.
It was a little light for a third baseman, an all-star
third baseman. I like that one at least a little better. I mean, just from the standpoint of, I do think that Todd Frazier's second half collapse did hurt his value somewhat. I mean, I do think, but I did, yeah, I love that deal for the White Sox.
But what could they possibly have gotten from the Angels to make it worthwhile to give up Jay Bruce? I mean, the Angels are number 30 with an anvil. They're Wile E. Coyote. Yeah, with holding the anvil, the giant boulder about to land on his head, and he's holding up the little umbrella. I mean, it's just not a good situation.
Again, if you said, okay, so that's the Angels farm system. Let's trade Taylor Ward and Jamiah Jones and Nate Smith. Now here's the problem. Is that probably sufficient right now for Jay Bruce?
Considering
how he's played the last 2 years and he's making $12.5 million, maybe. But again, my problem with that is not...
My problem with that from the red standpoint,
if they did that, is not that there's a much better deal out there right now. The problem is that, again, what is to be gained by doing that? The worst that can happen... I mean, yes, Jay Bruce could tank his trade value a little bit more by having an awful first half of the season, but the variance here is much more on the upside than the low side. If Jay Bruce goes out and hits 200 with little power in the first half of the season, then you can trade him for Nate Smith or Jamiah Jones.
Trade him for the bag of beans that you were trading him for now.
I mean, it's going to be slightly, okay, we didn't get Taylor Ward in the deal now. You'll live. But on the other hand, if Jay Bruce's knees a little better this year and he gets the swing back a little bit, and you'd even get back close to the guy what he was when he was 24, 25, if he's that guy again, then you turn around at midpoint season and you say, okay, then you are talking, can we get a Michael Fulmer type deal? Those kind of deals, which the upside of making a deal like that, and yes, do remember, at that point, he's a $6 million deal.
And for me, the other thing with the Cubs, with the Reds, is I wouldn't even trade for depth. I wouldn't trade for multiple prospects. Get some star power. If you trade Jay Bruce for one prospect, but it's a really up top 50 kind of prospect, I'd take that over three, Angels prospects. three guys who aren't sniffing the top 100. That's kind of where I
fall. Well, and again, I mean, right now you can't get any of those guys for him.
But the Reds,
that's what you wait.
Exactly. You try to build it up. I don't think the depth trades is what the Reds farm system even needs or what's going to help them win in 2018 or 2019.
Again, I think the only reason you're doing that trade that way is that you're saying that's the only value you've got.
And the only value is shedding a $7 million contract.
You're not getting that deal with the Angels and saying you're doing it because we want to get depth. You're doing it because you're literally saying
this is all
you got. I mean, like, if you said that the Blue Jays were the team who was trading prospects in the deal, okay, we'd be talking about something entirely different.
Right.
But again, we wouldn't be saying that they're not getting Anthony Alford in that deal.
Right.
They're not getting Connor Green in that deal.
Doesn't seem like it.
You're talking about probably getting...
DJ Davis.
Yeah. I mean, and again, if those are the deals you're making, aren't you better off... Again, nowadays we aren't talking about a situation where you say, well, if we save $12 million here, we can immediately pour that into the draft.
Right.
And we're going to have the draft where we sign every high school guy who fell and we just go crazy on it. You can't do that anymore.
The only way you could reallocate the money quickly is toward Cubans. And let's face it, time is running out. Every Cuban must go. What have Ben saying the last time we talked about it? 190 Cubans.
And $12 million now signing on Cubans is not going to get you. Doesn't buy a lot.
That buys
you a Yoan Lopez.
That's right. And that's buyer beware. Caveat emptor on that one. So a lively discussion, JJ, for 45 minutes of... just based off the Dexter Fowler signing and a couple of non-news pieces. That's how we roll at Baseball America. That's how you and I roll for sure. Fun stuff. We'll come back next week. We're going to try to be a little bit more on point, a little bit more on schedule with weekly prospect
Monday
podcasts.
Monday and Thursday
is the goal. Monday is the college podcast. Thursday we'll try to do the college podcast.
I can't promise you we won't have someone in between. Like I've talked to Anthony Alford, which we're going to put on another podcast. Also talked to Cody Reed. We're going to put that on a podcast too. So we got some other stuff. We're going to talk some players too. But we are, you know, we do want to remind you again, the Baseball America books. It's book season. Even if prospect season wrapping up, it is book season with the prospect handbook is out. You can get the prospect handbook now anywhere, but you still, it's the best to get it at baseballamerica.com/store.
Yeah, I had a question the other day about Jeffrey Baez of the Cubs, and it's like, well, if you order the prospect handbook from us, you'd already have a scouting report because he was prospect number 31. Go to baseballamerica.com/store to order or call 800-845-2726. For JJ, I'm John.
We're going now to a reminder. We're going to go to and here is Juan Hillman. Welcome back to the Baseball America Prospect Handbook Podcast. JJ Cooper, fortunate enough to be joined here by Indians left-hander Juan Hillman. Juan is coming off of a solid pro debut in the Arizona League last year, second-round pick out of Orlando, Florida, and out of one of the better baseball programs in the country. Juan, I mean, your team, you know, you're, for the couple of years you were at Olympia, but not just that, there's a tradition there at Olympia that it's pretty strong, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It's pretty strong on baseball, to be honest. Yeah, had a lot of few high-round draft picks and a lot of few picks overall coming from Olympia, and I'm glad to be one of them, to be honest.
I mean,
that's amazing.
You kind of have an idea. I mean, you had seen this, you know, with Nick and everything. You kind of knew what this process was like, I have to imagine. I mean, did it help having kind of some friends, you know, some guidance on kind of what to expect and what's a pretty stressful process, because we're talking about, you know, your future, obviously.
Oh, yeah, it was very helpful. Nick and all the other guys just giving me tips on, like, just stay within yourself, just be yourself, and go out there and have fun and play and compete and work hard every day, and it'll all be worth it.
But what is it like when you get up there on the mound, or you get out actually out in the bullpen even, and you look around and you realize, man, there are a lot of scouts out here watching me?
Actually, to be honest, I don't really, like, you would see them, but you don't really pay no mind to them. Going into the senior year, like, playing the first game All-American and the mm-hmm. All-American game. When I first took the mound, actually going out the first game, I was like, whoa, all these people, and I know most of the people here are scouts. I just kind of, like, tilt my hat down and just focus on the matter. You don't really try to pay no mind to them, because if you do, that's when you start overdoing it and overthinking. And I just try to stay as much as I can away from it, so it helps me a lot. But just stay zoned in and don't worry about the scouts.
But now, growing up, this is if we were talking to you 10 years ago as a kid, you wouldn't imagine you'd be right here, did you? You weren't going to be a baseball player.
No, sir. I was strictly football.
What position did you play in football? What do you think you were going to be?
So I was a quarterback, and I took it very serious in football. And I don't like go out and do showcases with football, because I didn't have a chance to do it. I got out of it so fast. Like, I stopped playing my ninth grade year of high school. That was my last season playing football. And then after that, it was strictly baseball. And that's when I knew baseball was for me. I mean, I love football. It was hard to let it go, but I knew baseball was the right sport for me. So I just stuck with it. And I guess that was the best thing for me.
Yeah, how did you kind of make that transition? I mean, what was it that kind of made you, hey, you know, let me try baseball?
Actually, growing up, my mom had a friend who told me, like, he saw me, I played with his son in football. He was like, man, you got it. This kid has an arm, he can throw the football. Because I was known to throw the football, like, slant routes and post routes, throwing it hard across the middle rather than throwing it deep downfield, like, Hail Mary. So they was like, hey, try him on the baseball field. And I went out there not knowing anything about baseball. All I knew was throw the ball to the catcher. So I was just throwing strictly fastballs. And I was doing it, and I was throwing strikes, and people swinging and missing. And ever since then, I just stuck with it.
So, I mean, did it take long, I mean, to kind of realize, hey, there may be a future in this?
I didn't really think it would be like a future until my ninth grade year. My ninth grade year, that's when I really was like, all right, baseball will be my career. No matter what, college or professional, it will be. So, yep, I'd say around ninth grade, that's what I knew.
And did you start doing travel ball pretty soon after that, or how did that kind of come about?
I started travel ball when I was 9.
Okay, so you've been involved in it.
I started baseball and travel ball, yeah, when I was 9. I started playing at a pretty late age compared to everyone else.
But, and then that's why, I mean, you know, and obviously Tom Gordon, I mean, has been a very important part of kind of this story as well. But if you could just kind of explain for people who don't really kind of understand, you know, how important, you know, former big league pitcher Tom Gordon has been kind of to kind of help guide you, you know, to this point.
Oh, being under his wing was amazing, to be honest. Giving me the tips and what to do and what not to do, what to throw in a situation to a batter, or what to do, like preparing yourself, getting your mind ready for the game and off season and all that. Growing up with Nick and him and Dee and everyone, the Gordon family, pretty much. Just having me stay focused and stay within myself and keep getting after it every day, being there to compete on the baseball field, like when I was batting, hitting, and pitching when he was pitching. So it was pretty much stay competitive, and that helped us get after it together and just want to be better every day. So it was actually amazing and a great time of my life living with them, and I still do to this day.
Now I got to ask you. Okay, Nick's in the batter's box. You're on the mound. Who wins that battle?
Oh, me.
Nick can hit.
I know you. I faced him a good amount of time, maybe like 3 or 4 times. So right now he's 2 for 4 off me, but I told him I let him get the hit. So.
That's what. Now I gotta ask you. This is I don't think you were there, because I remember Tom being there when we were in Burlington. We saw Nick Gordon hit his first. I think it was his first pro home run. You were. I'm assuming you were back in Florida at the time, weren't you? Because I mean, I think that was.
Yeah, I was there.
I was in Florida. Oh, you were in Florida.
Yeah,
okay.
Florida.
Yeah, because I say I don't remember meeting you that night. You know, we met Tom, but that, I mean, you know, again, it's. It's an impressive, I mean, D obviously had an amazing year last year. Nick's on the rise up, and here you are, you know, now, you know, jumping right into it as well. So you go through your high school season, you get drafted. For that first year, you know, that first half season, was pro ball what you expected, or was it different? And if it was, kind of how was it different?
Oh, it was different a lot. I know going into it, I was like, you know what? Everyone's good, but I feel like I'm just as good as them. So I went out trying to try to gas them up, throw hard. But at that level, everyone can hit. Everyone can hit fastballs. Yeah. Everyone can hit your mistakes. And I learned just be yourself and don't overdo anything. Because if you start overdoing it, the game will humble you and things like that. And pretty much. Yeah, it was a big adjustment for me this season. And I'm actually happy that I went through that early and not later on in the year. So I was pretty satisfied with it.
Yeah, I mean, when you kind of go out there, was there a moment that kind of was the eye-opener? Like, I mean, hey, I thought that was my best fastball and, you know, these guys can hit it. Or, I mean, was there any moment, or was it kind of more of a gradual realization of kind of some of the adjustments you had to make?
It was a moment and pretty much gradual. And I say the moment is when I faced the Dodgers in the ACL at their place. First pitch of the game, I threw a low inside fastball to the leadoff batter, and he came out swinging, hit a double to the gate. And that right there was like, okay, I realize, this is different. So it helped me a lot, though. And I'm actually happy that I'm happy I went through it and experienced it. So just. Pretty much. Now this year I'm more prepared, and I know what I got to do this year to take care of things.
The other adjustment is how was it adjusting to kind of the pro routine? You know, every fifth day. I mean, kind of a little bit of a different, you know, schedule and all. I mean, was there a lot to that, or was that pretty, you know, not much different than what you were used to?
It wasn't really different. That wasn't really a factor. Pitching every fifth day, like I said, at Olympia, I was pitching. But once a week or every other game. So, yeah, I've pitched, 12 games my senior year, and that's pretty much equivalent to what I was doing weekly in pro ball. So yeah, it wasn't really that. It was just me overthinking and all that things, all those things of love.
What was on the to-do list for the offseason? What do you want to be better, really, kind of when you show up in spring training than when you finished your 2015 season?
I'd say my fastball and locating it a little better. Hitting the inside half to the righty more often than just working away. So I'm really comfortable throwing the ball away to the righty or into a lefty. So this is me focused on throwing into righty, and my changeups, which is my favorite pitch to throw besides fastball, just fanning on top of that, and actually my curveball as well. But not just throwing the nasty 0-2 curveball, but to throw the strike one curveball, strike two, rather than just throwing the nasty one. So that's been a main thing I've been working on as well this offseason. And actually, endurance. I've been running a lot this offseason, get my legs stronger, and working my lower half a lot as well as my upper body. So,
did you feel like, did you wear down a little bit as the year went along? Or did you feel like, was there some times where the legs weren't kind of as much there as you kind of hoped?
Yeah, I wore down a little bit. I wasn't in the weight room, so it was hard for me to stay on it, on top of everything, my legs. I'm just running. I usually like to do a few workouts with my legs and the weight room, like squats or leg press, things like that. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about off season if I can get back to it. So now I'm actually ready, and I just have to keep running more, and I'll be all right.
As you said, your changeup, you really kind of have a lot of confidence in it. A lot of guys, especially if they got a good fastball, that's kind of the last pitch that comes along. How did you develop your changeup? I mean, when did you kind of find a grip? I mean, how did it kind of become something you could kind of trust?
I always threw it, actually, and been successful with it pretty much. Successful with it, and just keep throwing it, and I take pride in my changeup. So if I throw it 20, 30 times a game, I will, because I'm not quite comfortable with throwing it and confident as well. I throw it a 3-2 count, I throw it 0-2 count, or 0-0 count. I'm very comfortable with throwing it. So it is.
And lefties and
have a circle change.
And lefties and righties for you, right? I mean, you don't mind throwing same side or.
I'll throw it to lefty or righty.
But. Now, you said, though, the curveball, though, that's, again, that's been a little bit more development. It's not that you can't snap one off, but it is, it's kind of learning that feel for it and being able to kind of throw a different curveball depending on the situation, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And that's what I wanted to work on a lot this offseason. I pretty much got it done and down pat. So, yeah, you will see it early or you will see it late, and that's been the main thing I wanted to work on. And I'm happy I got that down.
So the other thing is you get to your first off season. I mean, it's a little different. I mean, it's something where, what did you do? I mean, what do you do kind of obviously you're working out, you're running and all that, but that's not, 15 hours a day. Kind of what did you do to kind of, get through the months between the end of the season and the start of spring training?
I watched a lot of video on myself as well. It's my part of my workout. Watch a lot of videos, go through mechanics, see what I was going wrong, if my arm's dragging, or if I'm not pushing, driving off the mound, or using any leg, and I'm popping up too early and not finishing some of my pitches. So, yeah, I watch a lot of videos as well.
But, you mentioned, you said, the first, against the Dodgers, the first at batter, okay, lines the double. Was there anyone who really jumped out to you? I mean, I know you're focused more on hitting your spots and all, but were there any hitters you faced last year who really jumped out as, man, that guy's going to be fun to watch? I mean, that guy's a tough, a tough guy to face.
Trent Clark from the Brewers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Trent Clark and Tyrone Perry.
No, Trent.
Both of them guys from the Brewers.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good team. That was a good team. But, Trent is he's got
he's got an understanding of what he's doing at the plate and with bat speed.
Yeah, because he can bunt it on you and take off around it, or he can hit it down the line and take off around it, or hit it to the gap. So he has power to knock one out over the gate as well. Now he's a tough competitor. It's not easy to get him out at all.
No,
but
he's no.
Just got to go after. Just got to attack.
You might get a reunion this year, and y'all might both be in the Midwest League, you know, facing each other again, which would be pretty cool. But you know, I mean, is there, you know, before we wrap up, are there some goals you have? I mean, are you kind of someone who's, you know, as you head to spring training, kind of has some goals for the season, or is it really more of just kind of the day by day?
My main goal, honestly, is just stay myself and don't overthink it. That's why I got caught up in last year, and I don't want that to happen this year at all. I just want to be more relaxed and just stay confident and stay focused and stay locked in and keep getting after it every day.
But, well, again, well, Juan, I really do appreciate it. Thank you for the time. Good luck in spring training. It'll be fun. Again, hopefully we'll run into you in the Midwest League at some point in the 2016 season.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thanks for having me.